ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening eargasm pleasure. Man, we only just managed to get on air today. There was something wrong with the connection. You know, it's like when you, oh, let's answer that. No, I don't want to answer it. Oh, come on, man, answer it, man. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. You have to unplug and plug in your microphone again, man. See? And that's it. That's what kind of just happened now. It was quite stressful. But we're here now. And boy, do we have a show for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Allegedly. We're very special guests. James Horak and Crystal Clark. And James, when you read his bio from his website, you realise he's got a rather unusual background. In fact, you could say he's had an unusual life. But in recent years, James has become known for his revealing the true nature of strange objects that people have seen in many NASA, ESA and SOHO images of the corona of the sun. The SOHO is a strip club, by the way. And he calls these objects EMVs, which stands for electromagnetic vehicles. James also talks about sun control, the solar anvil, and humanity's call. And today we're going to find out from him exactly what he means by all of these things. And Crystal Clark is an author who is passionate about sacred science, and we'll ask Crystal to explain exactly what sacred science is shortly, but her personal goal is to help humanity realize its full potential in meaningful ways that not only expand awareness of the other choices that generally uphold, regenerate, and recreate life, of which there are many, but also to rebuild the bridge between the mind and the heart, the mystical and material, so that the peaceful and abundant paradise we all long for can finally manifest here in, around, and through us. And we also want to give a quick tribute out to Kevin Smith before we get started out in our chat today. I only learned about him yesterday. Still have never heard one of his shows. I mean, I'm a young person. Okay, I'm sorry. Some people know nothing about Justin Bieber. I know nothing about Kevin Smith. Maybe I got the short end of the stick there. But I think the two of you guys may want to like to say a few words about the loss of your good friend and radio talk show host Kevin Smith, who died suddenly a couple of days ago. James, Crystal,
you can go first, James.
Kevin was a friend of mine. We spoke frequently. I had been interviewed by him on a number of shows. He was the first time that I ever spoke out about the EMVs publicly. I had known Dr. Berggren and his associate, Casey. But I'd been associated on a forum and kept involved with his work and supported him over the years. But the question about the EMVs is of a high magnitude, because once you realize that these critters have a great deal to do with protecting us by farming the energy of the sun, by that I mean F-A-R-M-I-N-G, then you realize that the only reason the Earth and the other planets in our solar system are able to continue a lineage long enough for civilizations to come to fruition, then you begin to understand that there's a great deal more to astrophysics than just time and chance, something that astronomers and scientists today will not indulge in any way, shape, or form as far as considering. And Kevin was able to break through this sort of information gap and gave me a soapbox to introduce my approach to understanding nature and intelligent design in the universe, so that I was more or less an expounder of something that most people would not even consider until they had heard the things that I had to say, and even then objected to strongly because of their mental attitude or agenda.
And Crystal, do you have something to say about Kevin Smith before we continue on with the interview?
Yes. A lot of people know that saying, you can learn more about a person oftentimes by what they don't say. And Kevin had what he called Kevinisms. And one of his Kevinisms was the idea that, especially in the UFO community, there was a big black hole in terms of what wasn't being discussed. And he understood how important that was, and that was his focus, to try to dive into that hole and find out what was going on and bring it to us. And he was exceptionally good at it. He was very focused. Truthfully, I think he also was, I think that he also had a sense of things, you know, he was very logical. He was a straight shooter, but I think that he also had a little bit of maybe something else going on, because he just really knew where to look. And
intuition.
Yes, intuition, absolutely. He definitely had a touch of that. I don't know if he would see it that way, but I certainly do. And I think what's strange about it is that, you know, we live in a world where people have no problems copying each other if they think they can make a buck. But the things that Kevin did, no one copied, because he was really riding the edge in ways that other people just weren't comfortable doing. And he brought us a great deal of very important information doing that. So he was the one who explored that void for us. And now that he's not here, that void remains. And it's really too bad.
You know, it's funny that we should say this, because just yesterday, I have an older friend, Jonathan Eisen, who does this this magazine, Uncensored, who publishes a lot of UFO stuff in here, and all, basically everything else, the whole spectrum. And I said to him, you know, I'm really concerned, because when activists and incredibly talented and really wonderful people get older, they eventually die. And what I was really sad about is that there's nobody comparable, nobody who has really achieved their level yet to come out and replace them, you know, to put on their mantle. And so whenever I hear of somebody like Kevin dying, I it's almost like I feel a loss on behalf of the human race as a whole. Do you sort of know what I mean?
Absolutely, and I agree wholeheartedly. It's a tragic loss for all of us, because he would go places other people wouldn't, and we were better for it.
Mm. I like you more and more, Vinny.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Now, on with the interview, thank you, Kevin Smith, wherever you are, for your various levels of awesomeness, openness, and whatnotness, considering I know nothing about you. And, James, let's talk about the sun. Traditional belief of the sun is it's a ball of furiously burning gas, occasionally sends out a sunspot, and occasionally, you know, wipes out electronic devices and maybe even goes supernova. And that's about all people know, really, about the sun. And you've got some incredible revelations to share that maybe sometimes goes contrary, but also adds and fills in a lot of the blanks. And I'd really appreciate it if you could lay it on me, brother.
The sun has a substructure. All planets have substructures. In effect, nature produces some very strange principles, but there is a design in how planets and stars are positioned, created, maintained, And if this were not true, there would be no survival of intelligence, and there would be no length to any kind of lineage that would permit the civilizations that we've seen and we have. And there have been many civilizations on this earth of our ancestors. We are progressing towards another extinction, and it will be the seventh. We've had a presence on Mars when we came into this system, and there's evidence, abundant evidence of our presence on Mars. And in fact, there are so many things hidden from us that there's more hidden than there is divulged.
Could I interject here for just a second? You know the thing that I love about the Mars photos that they send back from the little rovers that they send out? Okay, we're in the 21st century, right? And apparently NASA hasn't mastered doing color photos of the sky yet. Why? Because the sky is blue there.
Vinny, let me tell you something about that. I've got a little book here that I was taking images out of to show people what they're capable of on the moon. You see these images, you get these images of the moon that are blurred, that are that don't give you the true color or whatever. Well, there were so many better images taken in the late 60s around the Apollo missions than you see today. Besides the fact that, you know, this question about the face on Mars and Cydonia and a number of artificial structures there, we know very well that the rockets that carried ICBM warheads were capable of reaching Mars, and that we could put a spy satellite around Mars as easily as we could around the Earth. Are you going to tell me that we didn't have, at the time that Hoagland was being argued about what he had detected on Cydonia, are you going to tell me that they didn't determine that with a spy satellite that would be much cheaper than sending a probe to Mars?
Maybe they decided that they would Cydonia that information.
Well, they knew. Like I say, they had more than they divulged. And Kevin was so good, he would take some recent images from the rovers on Mars, for instance, and he would find a stream, a flowing stream. And then he would find what looked like a pump, and the fact was that pump was right where you would put a pump if you didn't want your valve to be burdened with sand. You'd put it where the turbulence was the greatest to keep that sand from bogging up that filter, so that the pump would draw on water and not get clogged up with sand. So, I mean, and a geologist called up during that particular show and said, yeah, that's a running stream of water, no doubt. So you can't, you know, you can hide a lot with lighting effects and a number of things that you do to these images because they're digital. You can enhance an image and you can de-enhance an image, and that's what they're so good at. And even though they were doing that with the solar images that have been coming in for many years now, finally, there were other agencies other than the Naval Laboratories, other than NASA, that were getting them too. They were getting feed. It wasn't being coded. So they were coming, you know, then NASA said, uh-oh, they're looking over our shoulders. So they finally, we were seeing the EMVs. Now, there were people that were seeing EMVs back in 2000 in the sun.
Well, James, we're coming to break now, and I think that's a good cliffhanger to linger on. People seeing electromagnetic vehicles, at the, around the sun. In fact, I believe I saw one of these images. It was like a flying saucer that was massive. It was like 500 miles in width or something like that, even bigger. I don't know. It was just crazy. We'll be right back after the break. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, Crystal Clark and James C. Horak are my guests. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You know what's profoundly, I am living in a synchronistic realm. Guess what the name of that song is called? Knights of Cydonia. And weren't we just talking about Cydonia in the first segment there? And the songs that introduce the show and the segments and everything are on random. And there's about 40 of them in there. So there's a 1 in 40 chance of a song called Knights of Cydonia coming on, introducing us into a segment where we were previously just talking about Cydonia. I love my life because there's little interesting things like that just make you go, yep, there's some weird Shiite Muslim going down and I haven't figured everything out yet. And I like the fact that I haven't figured everything out yet because it means I've got, unlike most people, an opportunity to learn something. Why is it that people think they're trying to put everything into a box, try to explain everything away, makes them more intelligent? Actually, what you're doing is limiting your own curiosity. Isn't that right? My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James Horak. Now, James, back on topic, you were talking about EMV vehicles next to the sun when they first discovered these images. What was it, back in the 60s?
Well, in the sun, they didn't become apparent to astronomers and a number of people because the professional astronomers weren't allowed to talk about them. If you're a professional astronomer and you make a discovery, you have to submit this discovery to the Office of Astronomical Telegrams, who reviews it and decides whether or not they'll give you permission to make public. And there are planets that have been discovered in our solar system that they're not permitted to talk about. There are four planets on top of the known ones that are not listed or discussed. And if you're a professional astronomer, you're out of work if you dare. And that's throughout the world. So, in 2000, when Hale-Bopp came through, there were a number of amateur astronomers that were, in fact, an amateur astronomer discovered it. But there were amateur astronomers that were trying to determine certain aspects that they considered anomalous about it. It had a double nucleation. And this, it came through twice. And on the second time that it comes through, passing between Earth and the Sun, as it's going out, I told a group of amateur astronomers at the time, I said, you watch it and you will see something in the sun you haven't seen before. And it wasn't because that the EMVs hadn't been there, but I knew that they would try to rent telescopes and observatories that were where the barrel of the telescope was in that quadrant and they would have a chance to see it. And they did. And not only that, but they could see that the EMVs in the solar activity, what you call sunspots, were interacting. And this group was known as the Millennium Group, not the television show, but this was what they called themselves. And I was in touch with them. Of course, some of the things I had to say were too far out. So, but I had been telling Dr. Berggren that they would be found in the sun. And he said, how do you know that? How do you know that? And yeah, he kept pressing me for an answer, and I gave him one that he couldn't accept. And that ended my direct communication with him. After that, I had to deal with his associate, Casey Dawkus, who's a lovely lady.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a my people will call your people kind of thing.
Well, he is an established astronomer. He has done enough. I mean, he discovered these EMVs in the rings of Saturn. And he was able to triangulate their size and see that they were building a ring, the A ring they were finishing off.
Well, are we talking about designer planets like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy here?
They are responsible for every major system that has the potential to host complex life.
Terraforming.
That's part of it. That's going on in Jupiter right now. Do you remember a series of hits on Jupiter that were called Shoemaker-Levy, and they told everybody that these were cosmic comet fragments that were coming in from deep space? Yet they came in a straight line, and they hit a planet, one right after the other, over a course of a number of days.
Yeah, I
now
recall
that. I mean, when anything explodes or comes apart in space, pieces go off in different directions, just like they do in atmosphere. Even with less resistance, they don't stay in a line. And you see, there was never anyone in the scientific community that ever suggested in the least that these were under intelligent control, but they obviously were.
So we're talking about Saturn being, having extra rings added to it or having rings taken away, and Jupiter being terraformed right now. Hasn't that red eye thing on it, reduced somewhat? It was apparently some big-ass storm, and now it's, almost gone?
Yes. The first mention of these fragments hitting Jupiter was in a documentary on television, kind of like 2020. And they had an artist's depiction of these objects hitting right in the eye of that storm, what you're talking about, directly. Now, that was too obviously a proof that they were under intelligent control, so then later on NASA changed it around to different spots on Jupiter. But that's beside the point. If they hit the same, hit a planet coming in from deep space, millions and millions of miles out in a string, they were under intelligent control. There's no challenging that. But of course, if you leave that possibility out of the discussion, and you have a bought-off, paid-off control media, you know, it's what is not said most of the times that it's the biggest lie. Critical omission is what it's called in legal terms.
Isn't it critical omission?
That's right. Mm. And you know, I really...
Critical omission would mean something critical about knowing everything.
I really enjoy having my English corrected by someone from New Zealand, and I thank you very much. That is a distinction.
I remember one time I was on the United We Strike radio broadcast, and Karen was giving praise to the crew and everything, and she's talking about the ever-effluent Gary Johnson, and I say, well, you just called him ever-effluent. That means unlimited poo. I was just thinking, Crystal, you've been very quiet here. Have you got anything to add into this little Jupiter kind of explosion thingy?
Well, one of the reasons that I eventually contacted James is because through my own experiences, I recognize that ignorance really is the greatest plague that we've ever faced, and it's intentional. The most important thing that we have not been taught is to understand intelligent design and creational design, and that we aren't being taught how all of this works, not only because this is part of the master-slave construct, you know, slaves aren't supposed to know how to read and write and figure things out for themselves, that's part of it, but the other part of it is that they're weaponizing creation, literally. And this is something that our predecessors, as James pointed out, this will be the seventh time we've done this, we've done all of this before, and we have never survived it, nor will we survive it if it continues this time. And what's so interesting about it is, because we don't have the knowledge we need to ask the right questions, we're not growing, we're not evolving, we're not answering the questions that we have now, which would take us, as James says, to the next step up. And then, I mean, there are questions that we can't even formulate because we don't know they exist, because we just aren't there yet. So what I appreciate about what James is sharing with people is that he's sharing creational design at the macro level. And I think that's really important. Because one of the lies that we've been fed is that the previous civilizations that they will admit were here, that suffered a catastrophic end, well, they like to tell us, well, there's just these cycles, they're solar CME cycles, or they're just pole shifts, or they're ice ages, and they just happen no matter what, and if you're just unlucky enough to live during the time that it happens, well, that's just too bad. But that's a lie. That is an absolute lie. And as James pointed out at the beginning, it takes time. It takes a long time for a civilization to develop. And there are mechanisms in place through intelligent design to ensure that we have that time. Otherwise, what's the point, right? It defeats the purpose of all of this if it's just randomly destroyed for no reason. It doesn't make any sense. So I appreciate what James shares, because for me personally, I did, it's kind of a long story, we can get to that later, but there were gaps that I found that I was looking for the answer to. And he's the only person I found who could answer those, fill in those gaps or resolve those anomalies and do it across the board in ways that don't cause more problems than it solves, which is something we just don't see. And I think that's important, because we are being duped into participating in our own demise because we don't know any better, and it will end the same way it's ended before. I don't want to see that happen, and that's the thing. It's preventable. It's absolutely preventable.
This reminds me, it's kind of like in computer games where it's a skill set, right, you know, you've got to be able to find patterns and so on and so forth. You get to such a point and you've got your limits, and if you don't achieve what it wants you to achieve, it's game over and then you have to start again. Is that sort of what we're talking about here? I mean, theoretically, if intelligences are capable of creating planets, creating life, maybe they're experimenting to see if a civilization can get to a certain point and cure its own ignorance, but we've never achieved it yet, so it's game over and back to square one.
Well, you have some problems that other peoples haven't had. You're unique in a certain aspect. You have the split consciousness. And this split consciousness is not always good. It allows you to be hypnotized. It's an easy way of being subjugated. You have more ambivalence, and it is something that manipulators can take advantage of. Your ancestors didn't have split consciousness and were reaching a very high level of culture and civilization. But something happened which ended all that, and the survivors came to Earth, or came to Mars. Earth was, at the time, was too hostile. And they were helped by a very advanced civilization to establish themselves there. And eventually, after about 50,000 years, they made the same mistake there that they had made in their own system that led to what astrophysicists term as a singularity. So they tried to establish a technology they were ill-prepared to do, that they had seen the ET communities. Most ETs, when they get to a certain point, join a community of other ETs, and they call this an extended community. And then no one really has to worry about anything, because someone's always got the means to solve the problems of someone else. So it guarantees survival. Well, they wouldn't do it, because your ancestors were headstrong, very proud people, wonderful civilization. And they decided they would build something like the solar anvil on their own. And they had two suns. Their system was binary, which complicated that. And they created something that you talk about black holes, and you discuss a number of other things, but there's something that hasn't come into conversation yet, and that's when you match energy of your star.
And we'll talk about more of that after the break. And I want to get a definition of what a solar anvil is, you know. It's just like, dude, do you whack out horseshoes on that, you know, like giant galactic horseshoes? What are we talking about here? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. James C. Horak and Crystal Clark are my very special guests. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our stance have gone with God.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose a sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guests, Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. Now, where did we leave off? Don't quite recall. Hello?
We're here.
Okay, that's good.
Crystal, are you here?
Dale, Crystal. Mr. Dale. As Crystal's might have gone to take a WikiLeak herself. Okay, I forget where we were when we came out into the last segment there. But anyway, let's move on, because when we talk about the sun, when we talk about ETs and then things like this, a lot of people just kind of they switch off. Have you noticed that? And it's like a program, and the program is designed to not connect things like dots together, but in fact to act more like a firewall to prevent things that would threaten the overall program. This is why being open and honest about information often gets you fired. As we were talking about the astronomers before. Isn't that interesting?
Well, what you were talking about is a psychic block. And many people have it. Anything that comes near to disturbing their comfort zone, they shut up. And they do it unconsciously at a level. You can, if you were to spend a week with me where I live, and we would go out, say, towards evening as the light is changing and in the west for 3 or 4 nights, I would show you something that you, maybe you could see it, but most people could not see it until I described it for them because they don't have the context to allow it possible. So they don't see it. This is a psychic block. And in this case, it would be a plane that might come overhead and start going straight down, freezing in the sky. And this happens in the west from where I live, visible to me when I'm in my backyard 3 or 4 times a week without fail, sometimes more often than that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't really want answers, I don't think. They don't want to know, but their survival really depends on it.
Well, I found that truth is painful. We grow up in a society that rejects truth because it's traumatic and instead prioritizes comfort, you know? Oh, this truck's got cushioned and heated seats, for example, to keep your ass warm. Mate, I'm going to use some of that. And this thing over here is a ruthless criminal New World Order scumbaggery bunch of filthy psychopathic slash archontic entities that want to exterminate you. Well, that's not very comfortable. No, I think I'll reject that one.
Well, of course, but... You know, they talk about it themselves. They, you know, Bill Gates talks about vaccine and the usefulness of it to sterilize people. Goes to Africa with his wife and offers to give free vaccinations that are guaranteed to sterilize whoever they give those vaccinations to. And he is doing such wonderful things. He's a philanthropist, isn't he?
he's full of something, a pest.
Well, you know, he's part of this New World Order Agenda 21 and proud of it, boasts of it. And you had Ted Turner, he talks about population reduction, getting rid of 95% of the, quote, useless eaters, unquote.
Yeah. There's a massive eugenics agenda that is essentially, it's like a parasite that has latched onto the planet and is, well, essentially sucking the brains out of the human race.
Well, there are a lot of people that would like to claim they're reptiles, there's this ET conspiracy or whatever, and that's part of the plan that has been in the works 40 years, that they're in the last two stages of implementing this police state globally that they call the New World Order. They'll have the asteroid threat, and then next they'll have the hostile alien invasion, which is all poppycock. And I would like to explain why this on principle is poppycock. If you get to a level of technology where you are nearing star travel, just nearing it, not quite there, you are at a point of having to grow above your technology. Stop weaponizing, stop all the profit-taking and profit-making that goes along with selling instruments of war. You are at a point of nexus. You're either going to stop it and civilize your planet, or you're going to self-destruct with your technology. And that's what's happening today.
Again, yes, that's right. And, you know, I think there's something important about that, too, because, you know, the people that are doing this have, and I think they believe it on some level as well, that they're going to be able to go hide underground or hide off Earth. But, you know, this is the 7th time we've done this, and if they were ever able to actually go hide, set the planet on fire and bail and then come out when it's over, we wouldn't be repeating the loop, would we?
Well, see, because- see here's the irony of it. Okay. Now, the New World Order is full of psychopaths, killers, murderers, rapists, pedophiles, that kind of thing. Okay. Now, here's our escape plan. Lock ourselves underground with the worst satanic pedophile rapist archontic psychotic scum that the world has ever known for 100 years. How's that going to work out for you? I don't think they've thought this one through, bro.
It's almost karma for them. But
we are our own worst enemies, aren't we?
Well, there's so much more to it. You cannot survive what they have in mind, and for a number of reasons. Now, first of all, you've heard the expression, the biblical admonition: "He who lives by the sword dies by the sword." Oh, yeah. He who weaponizes any kind of science or devotes science purely to oppressive devices, to the exclusion of energy alternatives, to the exclusion of cancer cures, to the exclusion of what's beneficial for people across the board, and spends all this effort weaponizing entirely technology, are giving any opposition a reason to oppose them by building in defeat. And there are defeats that are in certain countries' nuclear arsenals that have been put there by the people that made those weapons. Not to mention one in particular that would have already started World War III if they hadn't been stopped.
Well, who stopped World War III?
Once it was one of these built-in defeats, and another time it was E.T.
Well, specifically?
Almost 2 years ago, Israel wanted to launch against Iran nuclear missiles, nuclear-armed missiles. Nothing would work. Netanyahu got on an airplane and flew to the Kremlin to raise hell with Putin because he knew only two countries might have that kind of technology. Of course, neither ones did. But he flew to the Kremlin to approach Putin and threaten him, raising the devil. Putin didn't have any idea what he was talking about, and eventually Netanyahu came to enough realization that he didn't. So he delineated his attack to, well, I want permission to attack Iran. And, of course, Putin said, absolutely not. And he said, well, you get in our way, we can hit Moscow and wipe you out. And Putin said, well, we will turn Israel into an ashtray.
Mm. Well, I think there's a lot of people who don't know what Netanyahu is talking about. I don't think you should trust just any old Yahoo, especially not Netanyahu. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And bear in mind that this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you are capable of visiting the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, there's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And make a donation on the little donation button. We'll set up an automatic payment through the subscribe button or the bank account, which has the numbers there on the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Back in just a few minutes, folks.
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Fukushima irradiated island chains nation of New Zealand, which is apparently good for the economy because now everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And I also wanted to get your personal perspectives on this, just sort of a little bit of backgroundiness about yourself. How did you get into these fields of research for which you've devoted your lives?
Do you want to address that first, James?
Since I was 4 years old, I've suffered one anomaly in my life after another. And from that time on, I've been a tagged individual, as I described to Crystal recently. But things have happened, and it didn't make much sense to me. And in the 70s, I was prospecting in Utah and had an experience that woke me up. And I haven't been the same since.
There's something that awesome about that phrase there. In the 70s, I was prospecting in Utah.
Yeah. That's well, there is a place in Utah where there's an EMV operation.
What was it that you saw?
I had been coming back to the camp where we were proving out a claim for some people and to decide whether or not we wanted to lease it. And I'd gone into Grand Junction to get a lot of supplies, and I was coming back across the National Forest, or which is desert. I don't know why they call it National Forest, but it's BLM land. And I was coming across, and it's about a six-hour drive because it's a Jeep trail. And it was between 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I was tired, and I pulled up on this ridge. And I noticed down in this wash, they're just above, maybe 20 feet above the wash itself, a little bit below where I, eye level where I was standing, were these series of lights, UFOs, that were going and coming. You could see about 22 at a time. They'd go around, circle around a tower rock, come back, and then they'd go out of sight around a canyon wall. So, and I had already had a number of experiences with UFOs, and I have a medical discharge from the Navy over a UFO incident that occurred in Sasebo Harbor, Japan, just before Christmas of 1962. So I walked down towards the wash, and as I got about halfway down this slope, some of these UFOs broke out of formation and formed a V, but I would take this as a threat. This has happened to me before, but I didn't. And I just, for some reason, got the idea very strongly to go back, just lay down, go to sleep in the back of my little Datsun 510 station wagon. So that's what I did. When I woke up in the morning, all I had to do was think about something, and it was like I was accessing files on a computer for the first time, and things that I'd wondered about all my life, things that didn't fit, everything was coming together, and then I began to understand a yearning that I had had all my life, and the yearning was coming from what was deep in the ground there, and your planet is being held together by that operation. Without it, the problems that have accrued over the last quarter of a million years, the presence of mankind here and the abuses to the planet have mounted up so incredibly that this lineage has done things to the Earth that or cataclysmic if this operation wasn't there to hold it together. The hydrogen bomb, underground hydrogen bomb explosions that they used to prospect for oil and gas, this has done more damage than these geophysicists can imagine. and your planet come apart. It needs to be restructured. It needs to be, and I've warned this, and I can say it. I can say it right now, and that is that if this lineage comes to a point where this depopulation begins in earnest, that you will suffer a massive CME from the sun, the likes of which there is no record, and this planet will become another star, and this will be a binary system. And the people that are prepared to install themselves on Jupiter, well, in the moons of Jupiter where there are people, will have the energy they need to do so.
Continue.
Well, that's the end of the story for you.
Okie dokie.
Well, I mean, you know, there's really so much more to what he's saying, and it's, you know, Dr. Norman Berggren released his first book, The Ringmakers of Saturn, I think in 1984, and he tried to, of course, go through the alternative UFO community, and you know, this is just another example of people that don't want answers, because if people wanted them, they could have them, and he was trying to provide them. He was showing proof that there are entities in our solar system that are creating it, they're building it. And why is that important? Because every time SOHO puts out a satellite image of something, you get these paid trolls and shills that go on all of the forums and all the websites and say, oh, look, the evil reptoids are coming to get us. It's the reverse. It's a lie. Now, the other interesting thing about Dr. Berggren, the last interview that he did was with Carrie Cassidy of Project Camelot, and he explained that there was an attempt on his life to murder him with a poison apple, and also his safe was robbed, and no attempt was made during that show to ask him what was in his safe. Well, you know, when our controllers, our monsters, however you want to look at them, and which are very, very human, sell the lie that they can go hide off planet, if people had explored Dr. Berggren's work further, they would have discovered that they can't. They won't be allowed to. It won't happen. There was a fungus that was created that was eating the equipment that ruined a lot of their future missions that they planned, which was a very nice way of saying, you're not welcome here. And you know, the microcosm of our problems and the macrocosm of our problems are reflections of each other, and that we can't run from ourselves. We can't do it. And so when you have people that live in a country where things get really, really bad, they run. They don't deal with it. They run to another country. And because they didn't deal with it where they came from, they let things go. They do it in the new country, and pretty soon the new country becomes just like the old country, because they don't grow enough to understand how to become civilized, how that they are a part of that equation and have to get involved. So in that sense, what James has been trying to explain to people is it's the same thing up there. What we do here, if we don't grow past it, we will do out there. And that's not tolerable out there any more than it should be tolerable here. And I think what's really been on my mind a lot lately is I personally can't decide anymore. Is it really that people believe they're powerless, or are they just cowards? And I say that because you hear it all the time, don't you? Well, if you see a psychopath, you better run. The New World Order comes and destroys your country, you better go to South America. There's nowhere for us to run. You hear people say, well, you know, we need a brand new system. We need to scrap the old one because it doesn't function anymore. Well, there were laws in place to make sure that it would function, and everybody looked the other way. We can't run anymore. And people need to get that. We have to deal with what's happening, and there's no good reason why we can't. None at all. It's absurd to me that people will buy into the do-nothingness. You know, religion feeds this with it's mind control. They're cults is really what they are at the basic level, is Well, you know, it's written in stone. God wrote it in stone that you're all going to die a horrible death. So don't fight it. Just say your Hail Marys and wait to get raptured out of here. Of course, for the non-religious folks, that whole myth was rebranded as, well, you can just meditate every day instead of praying, and if that doesn't work, just wait until you get ascended out of here, right? And now you have the ET thing, well, these people are so far advanced, they can blow up your planet, and on and on and on, so even if you wanted to do something, you couldn't. Those are lies. Every single one of those is designed to encourage the individual to never, ever, ever get involved to determine their own future. And we're not going to have one if people can't recognize that. There's no reason for any of this other than people looking the other way.
This reminds me of a couple of things. Is firstly, I think it might have been James White or whatever his name is. I forget his name, but he's an Australian researcher who's published a huge quantity of information about the moon landing hoax, the initial moon landing hoax. And one of the points that I came up with during the interview was, why are we so obsessed with spending huge quantities of money trying to get to the moon anyway, or even into outer space, when we haven't solved or even come close to solving any of the problems that are here? And all we're really going to accomplish by going into outer space is bringing our problems out further into the universe and never solving them. And that was something I thought of. The other part of it is, human beings don't realize just how freaking powerful we are. A lot of the cases, you know, like
that's right.
I mean, I know so many activists in New Zealand who have actually changed government legislation. Who have like my friend Penny Bright, for example. She tried to expose the fact that, say, the Auckland City Council, which is operating under Agenda 21 protocols, was not publishing any of the private contractors' records or anything of that nature. So you didn't know what the term of the contract was, the scope of the contract, how much money or anything of that nature. And she got arrested 22 times by the New Zealand police in the council meetings, and she beat them 21 times in court. And the last one is going to the Human Rights Tribunal at the United Nations, because nowadays what's happening is police don't even come to the town hall meetings anymore if they're asked, because they say no, we can't arrest people out of town hall meetings. She accomplished that, and she also forced them to publish the scope, term, and cost of the private contractors. She did that by herself. Nobody else gave her a hand. That's how powerful we are. One person can force an entire giant evil entity system to come to its knees and bend to your will. That is how powerful we really are. That's just one person realizing their own personal power and not giving up. Imagine if another and another and another started to realize this. Oh, yeah.
That's exactly right. And now, once an individual recognizes that, now you can see why divide and conquer is so important, because we need to work together. But if we're too busy hating each other or being paranoid of each other, or, oh, the brown skin people did it, look, it's like a really bad cartoon, and it's really predictable, where the people that actually robbed the bank go outside and they take their masks off, and the angry people come out and say, which way did they go? And they point to someone else, and everybody grabs their torches and pitchforks and goes running after the wrong people. It's all transference of blame. And not even just transfer of blame, but also transference of the good things we do, right? Oh, God did that for you. You couldn't have possibly done that. A higher power took care of that for you. You know, people need to get involved, and their survival depends on it. There are more of them than there are of us. The problem is, and I say this all the time because I believe it, that I really believe that 90% of the people on this planet are genuinely good people, and they want to do the right thing. But I also know that generations, multiple generations of dumbing them down has ensured they don't know how anymore. And that's why they're being duped into participating in their own demise under the false pretense of doing the exact opposite. And that's a painful thing to come to terms with. And truthfully, the quote good people are the ones that feel it the most, because they get up every day and they take pride in, I'm protecting my family. I'm you know, it's important to me that they're healthy, so I'm getting them vaccinated. And then they bring home an autistic child, and then they find out later they participated in making that happen. It should make people angry. But what the problem that I see far too often is, when you use the word ignorance, people automatically shut off because they think that you're calling them stupid. But the fact of the matter is that we have been denied the knowledge that we need to direct our free will for our own benefit, and we can't do it anymore. And that should make people angry, and they should seek to then reacquire the knowledge they need to do it properly, rather than just be mad that somebody said they don't have it.
This is true, and what I find is interesting is that people, they'll get, it's sort of like the dog in the electrified cage. He keeps getting electrified and he can't escape the cage, and even when you open the cage door, he still doesn't try to escape. And I used to look after autistic boys, so I know what this kind of mentality breeds. I've seen, I've come up to them and said that my friend Catherine Smith, who does this magazine here, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, has a whole lot of herbal remedies and other things, you know, because some autism is curable. And yes. Not a single one of them took us up on the offer, because they'd seen so many specialists and so many doctors that couldn't do nothing and got their hopes up that they extinguished their hope completely. We'll be right back after the break at VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that realizes nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide from a new world order. What are you going to do? Try and escape the planet? And my very special guests, James C. Horak and Crystal Clark, and we're having a discussion over the break about leadership. And what it actually means. And, you know, you both raise very important points that I believe bear repeating. One being, James, the point that you made is that leaders are actually supposed to be there to inspire, to give people, something to look forward to, you know, keep morale high and so on and so forth. And, Crystal, you made a very profound point that you don't want to stay in this leader-follower paradigm anymore, because that's the reason why we're in such a bad shape, and that's how we've been so easily divided and conquered. Because if people don't know how to lead themselves, all the New World Order has to do is take out their leader, and boom, they become disparate masses again. And that is
really very, very true. And I'm a big believer.
And my point was that a good leader isn't somebody who bosses everybody around and says that I'm your leader, obey me. A good leader is somebody who recognizes the potential in the people that follow them and teach them how to harness their own personal power and abilities so that they don't need to be led anymore and become their own leaders. That's the kind of person I am. And in fact, just yesterday, I took it upon myself to go out with a couple of people to a child, youth, and family services office. It's the equivalent of the CPS of New Zealand. You know, they're basically a government sanctioned paedophile ring. You know, and what was interesting is that there were only three of us there. We had two cameras, a megaphone, and one sign, and there were three of us. We all took turns. One of us held the sign while one of us filmed and while one of us spoke and rotated until the point where all of us had gotten to speak. All of us had gotten to hold the sign. All of us had gotten to hold the cameras. And I was the one who was in possession of all that technology. And incidentally, it had all been donated to me. Now, these two other people that I was with had both had their children kidnapped by these particular organizations. And I tried to help by doing what I do best, by getting out there, making sure that their voices are amplified and making sure that what they say is recorded and then put online. And all three of us were really elated and felt really, really good about ourselves when we finished the protest, even though 24 people had said they'd turn up and didn't, because we actually said what the truth really was. We actually took action. That was something that was really encouraging, and that's what I try to do every day of my life, is give a platform to somebody who doesn't have it. Now, Crystal's having a little bit of a problem with her connection there. Now, in terms of leadership in and of itself, James, what do you think is the problem within the UFO community and so on and so forth that's really preventing disclosure or preventing it from actually becoming a really big, powerful movement to get the truth out there?
The cottage industry, the people that are making money off of it and that eventually become corrupted because they're protecting a thing, just like some of the conventional scientists. Somebody comes along with something to offer that is answering, resolving more anomaly, explaining, giving more clarity. If they didn't come up with the idea, there goes their book sales, there goes whatever. So what they try to do is they try to run that person off. They criticize them. They do all sorts of things. I've seen it happen over and over again. And meanwhile, they're marking time by this illusion of a smoking gun. The UFO ET phenomena is so diversified. These people are coming from all over this part of the galaxy. They're here for different reasons, but none are hostile. They're interested in what's going on here because it's a unique situation. They've never seen a species, an intelligent species, with split consciousness before. They're civilizations are very tame. They don't have the intensity. They don't have the creativity. They don't have the music, so many other things. And this right now is the greatest drama of the galaxy, maybe even the universe. And so, you know, if I could sell seats to it, I... But that's the situation. And to see how this is coming out, the question here is, and we talked about, and you talked about an experiment, about it being, well, yeah, of course it is. The universe is constantly looking for variation. Constantly, it has a consciousness, and it wants to see what fits in with what best. And it's looking in, and it sees this split consciousness. Can this be tamed? Can this be civilized? What power it has, what beauty it has. If only it can, you can take and remove the collective and individual aberrancy that's there. If you can do that, we have a prime candidate for the extended community on a scale that we've never had before, because this is unique. The split consciousness is a unique thing. Before, when it existed, it was removed very quickly when it occurred due to inconstant gravity wave and a number of other possibilities. But when it was removed, it became considered a flaw. This has persisted so long that we have seen an individuation occur that it tends to be new and vital and vibrant and to have many qualities that people that have become civilized and developed a high level of culture, they also have a downside to that. And it's a loss of the vitality. It's a loss of the creativity, the intensity that is so necessary to produce really spectacular art, music, and, you know, even entertainment. So you have a number of people that are out there that want to see you succeed. They don't want to see this come, and they have bought you time. Because the farmer lineages on this planet weren't given the consideration. And part of the extenuating circumstance they recognize is the presence of EBs, extra biological entities that are called the Greys, that are not species, but are nothing but drones, but they are problematic. And they're used by black ops here.
Can I ask... you, Crystal, in terms of leadership within the UFO community and what holds it back, I mean, it depends what you focus on, right? Like, if you focus on the negative, your outlook is going to become negative. And it strikes me that both of you have a very positive outlook. Why is that? What is it that inspires you to stay so positive?
Because we know what's possible. We know what's possible. And that there's no good reason not to have it. And so we want to try to remove all of the blocks that keep us from achieving it, I think. You know, the UFO community, here's the thing. It doesn't matter if you're talking about UFOs or you're talking about chemtrails or you're talking about abductions or black ops or vaccines or fluoride. It's the same people behind all of it. All of it. So we have to recognize that, and we have to begin to ask, who are they? And we have to begin to hold them accountable. And I think James would agree that one of the first steps for us in removing aberrancy is to stop looking the other way. We actually have to handle things, you know. We just can't do it anymore. And too many people are comfortable and are paid very, very well, especially in the alternative community, to look the other way. In fact, to encourage others to look the other way, because whom does that serve in the end? And a really good analogy, I think, is the Jonestown Massacre. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. It didn't have anything to do with Alex Jones, did it?
No, but not exactly. But here's the thing. So people that didn't want to deal with reality decided they would just go off in the woods and live in their own little reality. And one man, the leader, conned all of the followers into committing suicide. And these people gave the poison to their children first. And this is what people have to really grasp, because aren't we doing the exact same thing when we take our children and we vaccinate them and we put fluoride in their baby bottles? And, we are being duped into participating in our own demise, so we can no longer live in a world where only the, quote, smart people have all the answers and the rest of us are just so dumb and useless overbreeders. We have to let them take care of everything, because their idea of taking care of everything is destroying nature to destroy us, and that's not survivable. And I know that deep down, every person on this planet, especially if they have children, want to live, and they want to live right. But they can't expect somebody else to do it for them. You know, who can we turn to? Who's going to come and save us? Well, can't we save us? You know, do we have to wait for Jesus Christ to come back and fix it? Are we really that inept that we can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason why you haven't been saved, bro, is because you're waiting for somebody to save you. Look. How much gets accomplished when you do nothing and wait around for things to happen? Nothing!
Exactly. It's that phrase, I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's right. It's fixable. It's fixable to a point. And I'm really glad that people are waking up, because we are nearing that point. There is a threshold that once we cross, coming back from will be almost impossible. And we're being pushed farther and farther and farther in that direction. Once we get there, we're toast. But we aren't there yet. Until we get there, we'll know when we're there. There won't be any questions about it. We aren't there. It's fixable. I mean, my God, if you really care about people, why would you not do something to change it? You know, It doesn't make any sense. So I personally don't see the difference between a New Age community that's conning everybody into not actually doing anything, or a religion that's conning people into not doing anything, or Jim Jones telling everybody, well, just lay down and die. What's the difference?
Did you ever have like an aha moment? Like, oh my God, I actually have the power, like He-Man. To drive back scumbaggery, to do what's right, and to play my part in making humanity go down a path that is actually beneficial.
Well, you know, I've never not done my part. And so for me, it's a strange thing to encounter repeatedly so many people that won't. I can't understand it, truthfully. I don't get it.
Yeah. Kind of like how a good, decent, honest person doesn't understand the mentality of a psychopath. And it's like, why would they do something like that? Well, the only reason why you don't know, bro, is because you're not a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag. That's why you don't understand it. Because you're a good, honest, decent person. Just like a good, honest, decent person really just I don't know. They could go around and they think everybody's like them. It's like, oh, sorry, bro. There really has been a split in humanity. And then is this what you're talking about, James, when you talk about split consciousness, how humanity is capable of great compassion and great violence?
Well, the this is the ambivalence that's part of it, but basically, the split consciousness is the subconscious and conscious minds having totally different asset. The subconscious is associated with survival. It's associated with the thalamus, the primitive brain. It is capable of absolutely total recall, perfect recall. It is absolutely able to distinguish the slightest falsehood. And it corrects every lie, every dissembling of the conscious mind in reverse speech. It's correcting it. And not only does it say this is a lie, it tells what is the truth. So that with this aspect, this struggle going on between the subconscious and conscious, the conscious mind is not employing the direct abilities that it's capable of because it's in this war. You have a person trying to figure out a problem. He's got to worry about, well, did I do it right? Did I do this? We call a person a genius because they're free of this in their particular specialty. We had at one time on this planet men that were capable of doing that in anything they tackled. Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Galileo Galilei, Copernicus. These were men who were capable to turn that kind of genius on anything. But we have a society today where these men are a void.
Okay, well, hold on a second. We want to talk about this after the break. We've only got one more segment. Man, I wish those feeds wouldn't come up so abruptly. And cut you off in the middle of the speech. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with James C. Horak and Crystal Clark. You can get the archives to this at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and watch the YouTube versions at youtube.com/Mr. News Guerrilla Media. Back in just a few minutes, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about jamming a big monkey wrench into the mechanisms of the New World Order and its mind control operations that try to convince you that you're not an incredibly powerful individual that can change the world. I can assure you that history is literally full of people that by themselves have changed the world. Indeed, the only people who really have. Understand that and understand it good and proper, ladies and gentlemen. You are the one who can change the world, if only you would believe it. My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And we've only got a few minutes left. And James, I wanted you to finish your point about these. You were mentioning off a whole number of names of these men who are capable of shedding their genius onto whatever kind of aspects they wanted. and the accomplishments therein that really kind of sent echoes throughout humanity. Because I thought it was quite encouraging.
Yes, and the only reason we don't have them today is because there are stopgap measures that have been employed in education and vaccines and other things that have kept this flower from blossoming. But we have today, we have kids that, if given the direction, might have that genius. The sad thing about our science and technology is that everything's compartmentalized. Everything comes under some kind of security classification. Nobody has the overview. So if we did have a genius, if we did have someone that was capable of taking something and running with it and creating something new, they wouldn't have the overview. They wouldn't have the tools to do it with. They wouldn't have the opportunity to do it because everyone is afraid of corporate secrets. They're afraid of satisfying the restraints of compartmentalization, which is useful to those that want to control technology, want to keep anything from being invented that will challenge cartels, corporations, and their hold on utilities, their hold on oil, their hold on this, and their hold on that across the board. This began with Edison. Everybody thinks that Edison was so wonderful. He wasn't wonderful. He had a school of inventors, just like Maupassant had a school of short story writers, and he did more to help industrialists suppress technology than otherwise. That's why he had so many problems with Tesla. He cheated Tesla out of $100,000 when he challenged Tesla to build one of these transformer stations that would up the voltage of direct current, because he wouldn't listen to Tesla when Tesla said, I can convert this to alternating current, and you won't have to worry about losing voltage when you go up a skyscraper. So that's not very bright. We give Edison far too much credit. He was in the way of technological advance, not the other way around.
So, was Thomas Edison the one who invented the light bulb, right? Ironically, he wasn't that bright.
Not really. No. And, you know, we give Marconi the credit for inventing the radio, and he didn't. There are just a number of things that came up. We give Edward Teller, the credit for inventing the cyclotron, and he didn't. His graduate student did.
Hey, and in fact, this is something that's happening in the scientific community big time nowadays, is a genius will come up with a great invention, and then they'll go to their professor or the head of the dean or whatever the frack, or somebody who they really respect in the scientific community, and they get surprised when the mother fracker steals that off them.
Well, that's what graduate students have to accept. They're in there to get their meal ticket, which is a master's or a PhD, and they have to put up with all this crap from... See, every graduate student has what's called a committee, and that's a certain number of professors who have tenure who... They'll even tell him how to write. You know, he may be proficient in writing or whatever, but he has got to deal with, in many cases, a self-important pedant. And I've seen this. I've been a graduate student, and I know what I'm talking about. So, and then you say, for instance, you get through all the political aspect of it. You have to go in and defend your dissertation if you're a PhD candidate. And, of course, they can throw all kinds of obstacles in your path if they just don't want you to get that meal ticket.
Now, this reminds me of when I was in university, and I don't know about you, James, but I always coasted through high school. I coasted through university, you know, just getting C averages without even trying. And then they gave me the option of doing an essay, And one of the options for the essay was anti-television discourse. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's my bag. And I was like,
you got an A, didn't you?
Let me finish. For the first time ever, I read source material. I put bibliographies, notes, and things of that nature all through this essay. I showed it to my my friend's dad, who was a English professor at the university, and he said it was just brilliant. And they gave me a D.
Really?
And that was the moment that I realized that it was the opinion of the marker that television was inherently good for everybody, that my analysis disagreed with, even though all of the evidence that I just basically, this is what I thought. You know, it was evil because of such and such and the short attention spans and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out that all of the source material that they gave us to read actually proved what my opinion was. And I put it down and they gave me a D. And it was at that moment, that very moment, that I realized this is BS. This whole university system is complete BS. You know how many times I've actually found some kind of a usefulness out of my 2 years of university, like one bit of knowledge or any bit of knowledge that has actually ever proven useful in any situation at all? None.
Well, of any kind. Vincent, I disagree. You have the knowledge that it doesn't matter. So you're not opining.
University didn't teach me that. University didn't teach me that. I taught me that.
No, it did teach you that because you had that experience and learned from it.
Yeah, unintended consequence, maybe.
Yeah, well, look around you. All the people that think
like
that
university
they are
actually accidentally taught me something.
It didn't intend to.
Yeah. It's like, oh, bro. Now I've figured this out, and I haven't finished my third year of university, and I'm not gonna because I'm learning a heck of a lot more information off of people like you.
Vinny, we're having too much fun. Do you know that?
Yeah, that's always been my problem. It's like that was the thing that also really bugged me is, you know, just thinking back on it now, how much fun have I had on this show learning really incredible, interesting things that are actually really quite profound and teach me lessons about who I am as a person and how the universe truly works and that kind of thing. You know, like these things I feel are really important and I've had a lot of fun doing it. And I didn't have any fun or find virtually any interest out of 2 full years of university work, regardless of the subjects that I was studying. I think I did like take 12 different subjects that were like completely different, you know, from Japanese to world history to communication studies and film and media and everything like that. And it was all boring.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the agenda of higher education is not to teach you critical thinking. It's actually to teach you to be critical of people who can actually think.
Yes.
and that starts with public education. You know, that starts in the first grade of public education. They have a syllabus, and anybody that is a great teacher that can inspire is constrained by that syllabus. That's why they quit.
It's more like a succubus.
Yes, it is.
That's a really good pun there, isn't it?
Syllabus succubus.
Yeah.
We need to how about some lyrics, a song? They got me with the syllabus succubus.
Yeah, I mean, the syllabus does succubus quite a lot. And
yes, I was waiting for that.
This is how much the syllabus sucks you, boss. Okay,
yeah, so
we've only got 1 minute left to go, and I would like to give out your websites. Sorry, I haven't remembered to do that in the first place. So emvsinfo.blogspot.com, that's emvsinfo.blogspot.com. That's James's website. drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com. That's drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com is Crystal's website. She also has another one, The Soul Society. That's Soul, S-O-L, thesoulsociety.com. And we've got about maybe, 20 seconds each to wrap up and say one, you know, profoundly encouraging thing before we finish up the show. It's been a pleasure.
Crystal?
Well, thank you for having us, and I just encourage people to recognize that they are capable of creating the future they know that they deserve. They just actually have to do it.
And James? And I can't help feel like I'm doing this. Oh, well. All right. Maybe that's the thing of it. All right, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great week. And thank you very much to Mel, the associate producer, for she's put in a lot of work. And the very reason why most of the guests have shown up this week and the reason why I've actually been able to read off their bios and they have prepared questions and things like that isn't because I've been working very hard, isn't because I've been looking at their websites and so on and so forth and doing the studying and the real actual hard work. It's because she's been doing it all for me, you know? You work as a team. You do what for each other what you can and you play to your strengths. And I just want to say to you, Mel, I am so very, very grateful for the opportunity to interview all of these wonderful people you've organised for us, especially you, Crystal, and James. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.